Hi everyone, welcome to Learning Through Crafts. This is Faggy Cobry, and I'd like to welcome you to the audio section of the Learning Through Crafts course, the complete multimedia guide to educational arts and crafts for kids. Educational arts and crafts is really under the banner of what I call educational art. And I divide it basically into three parts. Part number one is the projects, which is really what we're going to be covering in this course, which is educational arts and crafts. The second one would be process-only activities, which is more of strictly educational art. And then something that kind of marries the two, directed educational art, which is something that's more guided drawing, painting, collaging, real art, but more guided, as opposed to like projects is more guided, process only is less guided, and the directed art kind of marries the two, those two together. Now, if you're a preschool teacher and you are used to running a center-based classroom where you have different centers set up during your work period or during your playtime, and you have children going to different centers to work out. Maybe they have, they're working at the block center or the dramatic play area. You have a manipulative area set up. Some people have a computer center set up. I really don't know in what milieu you are working in. So I'm just going to assume if you're a preschool educator, an early childhood educator, I'm going to assume for the most part that you're doing a center-based classroom. If not, you can somehow apply what I'm going to talk about to your situation. So if you have a preschool, if you have a setting in a kindergarten or a nursery, any early childhood setting, and you want to add an art center to the classroom. Now, when I was a teacher, when I was a preschool teacher and when I was a director, we would discuss this a lot in curriculum meetings, how we're always looking for more exciting centers to give the children things to do. Like when I would sit down with my children at the beginning of the day and we'd have circle time and then we'd say, okay, it's work period time. Some people call it play time, but it would be work period. And I'd say, okay, let me tell you what's available today. We have the blocks open and the dramatic play open and we have this opening. And if there was an art project going on, if they were creating something for a holiday, we say, this particular activity is open. And I just felt that really art can be used more in centers. We didn't have to waste that art center table for the project of the day or the painting of the day, whatever activity that was done. I felt like there was more to be gotten out of an art center. So the truth of the matter is, what many people use, what many teachers use their art centers for is for storage. They stick their easel nearby and they put their paintbrushes and paints and paper and crayons there, and that's what it really is. Sometimes they have the table for the art projects nearby, and that's really how it's used. Now, I'm just going to suggest, before I get right into the learning through crafts, the educational arts and crafts itself, I'm just going to suggest a way to set up a center in a preschool classroom. And I keep saying preschool. To me, preschool is really pre-elementary school. So that could be anywhere from threes, fours, fives, up until they start first grade, early childhood setting. The truth is, in some schools, they even have centers set up in the first and second grades. But how I would set it up was I would have three different art activities going on in a day. One table would be our project, our crafts that we're going to do for that day or that week. Another table would be set up for a process-only art activity, like clay work, if you're doing clay work, painting, whatever activity you're doing with that. And then the third thing would be using the art center itself. And what I would do with using this art center itself is I would make changes every day. I would make it an exciting place for the children to look to see what is there that I can do today. A lot of kids love, especially girls, they love making all kinds of interesting things and being creative with paper and paste and glue. And if you make it kind of the activity for that day in the art centers, they should look to see what's in the mystery box or what's on the shelf. Are there scissors today? Are there paper? What shape is the paper today? Is there string? Is there a hole puncher? You could be making changes to this all the time and really make a very exciting Art Center for the Children. It's just another way to add art to your early childhood classroom. Okay, so that really is just off on the side. I wanted to mention that as we were talking about educational art being divided into three, I wanted to mention how I call this is in the early education, in the early childhood setting, I call it three-part art because they can do that. Of course, in all three parts, they're using educational art philosophies. Now, if you've read my free report, it's very possible that you have. If not, you can actually go to my website at www.educationalartsandcrafts.com, and right on the first page, you can just click on the image of the book there, and you can just insert your email address when it comes up, and you'll be able to download this report. And what I do in this report is really I am explaining what I call the win-lose of copycat arts and crafts and how to make it into win-win. And I'm not going to go into detail because if you haven't read it, you can go and read a little bit more of the psychologists that I discussed, the developmental theory, Piaget and Erickson, but I'm just going to discuss some, you know, more important points. The truth is I call copycat arts and crafts or traditional arts and crafts win-lose arts and crafts because I'm being charitable. Using the win, many educators who are not progressive educators, who are more of old school educators, tout the benefits of arts and crafts by talking about the fine motor coordination the children gain and by the direction following skills. Now, these are very weak arguments because fine motor coordination, that's okay, that's fine. Maybe they do some cutting and do some coloring and they are getting some fine motor coordination skills. And maybe they are learning some direction following. However, I think there are much better, much more exciting activities that the children can learn direction following skills. And the same goes with the fine motor skills, but I'll give them that it's a win. It's a win-lose because they're losing much more than they're winning. They're losing creativity because they're not being creative. They're following whatever the adult is telling them to do. They're losing any thinking skills. What's to think if all you have to do is follow what the adult tells you to do? They're not solving any problems. And they can't feel very good about themselves when every one of the projects that all the children are doing are the same. Or if they look the same as their sisters or their brothers if they're doing it at home. I actually have a cousin that I remember many years ago telling me that when she was in her kindergarten class, she distinctly remembers her teacher holding up a project and saying, "This is what we're going to make today," and her feeling, she must have been 5 years old, her feeling, "Mine will never look like that." So there you go. How is a child supposed to get self-esteem when they're following exactly what an adult does? They're really robot-like. That's what we train when we do the copycat crafts and we do the traditional arts and crafts. We're really training our children to become robots. So in this free report, I discussed two very famous child psychologists, Piaget and Erickson. Piaget is a well-known psychologist who became very fascinated with learning how children come to know, and he did lots of experiments with this. What he would do, he would try to see young children's at their age, what their thinking was and how their thinking developed. He did many tests, and when I was in graduate school, I had to write reports on this, and I had to really repeat some of the tests that he has done. It's like really very fascinating because one of the concepts he talks about is conservation, being able to conserve what you saw to the next activity. For an example, if you have two glasses of water, the same size glasses, the same amount of water, you show them to the child. Then you have two other glasses, one very tall and thin, one very short and wide. You take two glasses of water and you pour them into these two different types of glasses. Inevitably, the young children will say that the taller one has more, notwithstanding the fact that they saw that they were the same amount before, because they don't have the ability to conserve. He did this with many different things. He did this with lines. He did this, you know, they would have two sticks lined up with each other, and then you would move one. They would see that they were the same length, and then he would move one. The one that was closest to him or her, they would say that one is longer, because they didn't have that ability to conserve. So what he discovered, Piaget, is that children learn through doing and through sensory activities and concrete activities. It's very important for children to get a lot of very hands-on activities, especially in the math area, but it relates to the thinking and problem solving also with art. Now, Erickson was the one that was the psychologist, but he did a lot of work with the social and the psychological area. And he developed different eight stages of man. And he talked about how children are going through different stages. There's kind of a war going on at each stage. It starts with trust versus mistrust, where the baby is getting that feeling, do I trust? Am I getting picked up? Am I getting fed? And then each time they pass through that stage, they're ready for the next stage and they won't be dysfunctional. You find lots of children that, and the younger their needs are not met, the more dysfunctional people are as they get older. And you will find that young children are very resilient if they really get their basic needs met. And we're talking the early childhood years, mostly are talking about the autonomy, shame and doubt, autonomy, initiative versus guilt. And we're trying to give children the feeling that they're okay and they can do what they're trying to do and they could be independent. And these are the concepts that we're working on with the young children that we're dealing with. What happens is when children are not allowed to create and to be given choices and given the independence to create, they're kind of left like little robots, like we said. When I was working many, many years ago, I had a consultant from the Board of Education who described a story to us. She was subbing for a second grade classroom and she decided to give them an art activity. So she basically just put together paper and scissors and markers and just gave them out to the children, tell them they can do what they want, and sat down to do some work. It was very quiet, and after a few minutes, she looked up. She saw every child sitting at the desk and just looking at her. She said, "What happened?" They said, "You didn't tell us what to do." They were absolutely frozen because they had never been given the opportunity to do things on their own and to make choices and to really be creative on their own, and they weren't trusted. They were scared that they were going to get hit over the head or they were going to be punished, or worse, they'll just would do something wrong. And they just really had a really hard time doing that. One of the big things is that we have to understand how children develop. And that's why I put out that free report to just explain a little bit to you how some of the big psychologists learned to understand children. You know, many years ago, I had this idea. There was that famous Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus book. I wanted to write a book called And Children Are From Pluto, which I'm not even sure that's a planet anymore. But the problem is people don't realize that children really are coming from another planet. And it takes them a while to get up to adult stages. And they're different things, children. They're not adults, and we have to understand what to expect from them. And the large problem, especially with the art, is that people don't know what to expect. They just think that children that are very young really should be creating a lot more sophisticated works of art than they're really capable of. When my older daughter, who is married with her own children now, was in playgroup, I remember taking her to orientation and sitting by the side and watching. And there was a table set up with some glue and pieces of paper for the children to work at. And one little girl went over and sat down there and she took some paste and she took one piece of paper and she pasted it down on the paper and she just sat there. Now, one of the teachers, who was an absolutely wonderful, natural teacher, she was great with children, she walked over to her and she sat down next to her and she picked up the paper and she turned it over and she said, "Look, it sticks." And I marveled, because this showed me how well she understood where that child was at. At that point, that child was just learning that paste or glue makes things stick. How many adults are just so busy trying to get out of the children, "What did you make? What is that? What did you do?" And really, all the children are doing at very young ages is just using the materials and learning how the materials work. Now, the really cool thing about it is that all children go through the same stages in basically the same order, unless there's severe problems. Children in Japan, and children in Australia, and children in Indonesia, and in children in the United States, all do not walk before they crawl, and do not run before they walk. And the same way it is in art is the way it is with any other stages. There are stages that children go through, and we have to understand what those are. Many years ago when I was teaching, I had a little boy come into my class who had never been in school before. He was 5. He had a very IQ and he was very bright. But when he went to the easel, he started painting like a 3-year-old. And he was mushing and covering the paper with the paint. And I watched how he slowly entered different stages. And pretty soon he was making representational figures and representational pictures, because he had to go through those stages. But he really was at the age where he was ready to start making representational pictures. He just had to go through those other stages before he was able to get to that one. What we need to do is, what we have to realize is that we're building a solid foundation, but we have to be patient, and we have to understand that children are where they are. Parents, many teachers, have an inability to be satisfied with slow development in children, and they don't realize. It is a little bit frustrating if you're a teacher of 3s and the children are going to be spending a whole year basically within the same stage. They're not going to move that much. We have to be patient enough to say, you know what, they're 3. If you're a homeschool parent, you have it a little bit easier because you get to see them through 3, the 2s and the 3s and the 4s and the 5, and you really get to see the differences. Now, some people love teaching that age, and some people don't have the patience because they really do like to have children making more representational things. And if you are one of those people that really needs to have more representational artwork coming out of the children, then I strongly suggest that you don't work with really young children, because you will be disappointed, you will be frustrated, and they will feel it. And it won't be the best for them or for you. The truth is, what really young children need is really process-only art. There are many people out there, you'll find them on the web, who are into art for children and really don't believe in any kinds of crafts at all. There's a very well-known author, Mary Ann F. Cole, who has a number of wonderful process-only art books, and I suggest you check them out because she has wonderful, great ideas. There's also a great website, I'm sure there's plenty, but this one is kinderart.com. They have lots of very good ideas. Some of their stuff is very educationally appropriate, some of it is more traditional copycat stuff, but there's enough really good educational art in there for you to get some wonderful ideas from there. But even though young children really do best with process only art, what happens is that really, adults need crafts. They need the crafts for the children. They need the structure. They want to make something. They want to make something for a holiday. They want to make something for a special day. And they need to do that. But what you have to realize is that by you allowing the children to create at their own levels, what you're telling them is you're telling them, I trust you. I value you for who you are. I value your abilities. I know that you can think and you can solve problems. And I know that you are really a very creative person. But what happened was, I realized that there really is a need. There is a need for crafts. People need crafts, and it has to be done in an appropriate way that fits the developmental stages of the children, which is why I created Learning Through Crafts. I put together all the different holidays and the seasons and the countries, and I really put together this whole course for you. Now, before I go into what the course is, I just want to talk a little bit about what the adult's role is in educational arts and crafts. In regular copycat arts and crafts, basically what happens is the teacher comes up with an idea. She gets to be very creative and come up with an idea, make up her own idea, get it from the web, find it from a book. She shows some of her colleagues or friends what a cute idea, not realizing that the cute is from her. It has nothing to do with it. It's not related to the children. It's just cute because they think it's cute. And then the children, basically, she has somebody cut out the pieces, and the children follow, and there they have their copycat art and crafts. Now, the adult's role in a learning through crafts and an educational arts and crafts program is a little bit different. Yes, she is the facilitator, where she or he is going to help facilitate the process. She's going to be the one to collect the materials and choose the materials. She's going to learn how to comment properly on the children's art. And help out by giving ideas and help out solving problems. Now, just like a copycat arts and crafts teacher you very often becomes creative by thinking of ideas, the kind of creativity that a teacher can do by doing educational arts and crafts is even better, because what you're doing is you're thinking of ideas to help make the children creative. Like, let's say I'll give you the example of a winter picture. If you're doing a winter picture, you decide to give them black paper, and then you cut up white circles, and you cut up different types of things that suggest snow or suggest other types of objects that you think might go into a winter collage. And it's up to you. You can think of different backgrounds and you can think of different materials. And by you, that's a way you can also be creative, by coming up with many ideas for the children to be able to make their own creations. Out of your creativeness, they can be creative. By facilitating, I mean being there when the child needs help. If they're making a flag and they have a string they want to put across it, you might help them by saying, well, I think that string is a little bit long. How would we figure out where to cut it? How long it should be? How do we put this glue onto the paper so that the papers are not sticking up? You're there to help the children with problems. You're also there to comment on their artwork. But the way to comment is not necessarily by saying everything is beautiful and that's lovely, because there's nothing wrong, nothing's going to happen if you do that once in a while. But if we're trying to bring out the best in the children, what we want to do is we want to comment on the artwork itself. Now, if it's just a painting, you can say things like, I see you used a lot of blue, or you used made a lot of circles, or I can see how you moved your arm. You actually can check out, I have a blog on this, on my a post on this on my blog about some of the best ways to comment. You try going to educationalartsandcrafts.com/blog, or else you can go just to the website Educational Arts and Crafts and click on blog. If you could find the commenting, how to comment on children's artwork, that'll give you some more tips. But this way the children stop and they think about what they did and they really look at it. And, oh, I see you put a piece of ribbon all around, and you use 3 pieces of orange or 4 pieces of yellow. By commenting it, you're giving value to what the child did. And aside from that, it's making them think, really put thought into what they do the next time, because, oh, she noticed. Look at that. I didn't even mean to do it that way, but she noticed, so it must mean something. What you can also do is sometimes, especially if children are not used to doing this educational arts and crafts, is that you can give ideas. Sometimes a child sits down and they don't know what to do. So you can give an idea, but don't give one idea. You have to give 5 ideas. If you throw out 5 ideas, like, well, you can make a crown, or you can these kind of eyes, or you can make a skirt, or you can make hair with yarn, you can make hair with ribbon, you can make hair with this grassy material I have. And then the children can either pick up on one of the ideas or ignore one of your ideas and just take something from it and come up with their own idea. But at least you're giving them some kind of input without having them copy and having to do exactly what you tell them to do. Okay, so now I'm just going to explain a little bit more about the ebook itself, because that's the main part of this course. And a lot of these ideas you're hearing over and over again. You're hearing them in the audio, you're seeing them in the free report, you'll see them again in the ebook, because the more you hear these ideas and the more you read about them, the more it will become part of you. You'll believe it and you'll be able to repeat it, and you'll be able to explain the ideas to other people and sell them on the ideas themselves. So in the book I divide up educational arts and crafts. Since this is educational arts and crafts, that's the project part of the educational art. And I divide it into 5 categories. I have, the first one is cafeteria style. Then we have process only with templates, transformed art, and decorations. And now I'll explain each one. Cafeteria style, that's my favorite. And in the book, you'll see a little icon of a woman serving at a cafeteria. That shows that that's a cafeteria arts and crafts project. And what this is, it's really like a cafeteria. Well, you know, you go into a cafeteria. I'm sure most of you have been in a cafeteria. And there's an array of food, and you take a tray, and you choose what you want, and you go sit down at your table, and you eat lunch or dinner, whatever it may be. You had choices. Now, this is what it's all about, choices. Now, not every single activity can be done like this. That's why it's divided up into 5 types of crafts projects that you can do in the educational arts and crafts. So this would be more like, let's say you're making, we're going to go back to the winter collage. If you're going to make a winter collage, and you will have all the different materials set up for the children to choose. Now you can have them either at the table and right in front of their paper, and they can choose and just immediately take from the center and put the stuff, paste the stuff onto their paper, or else you can have a separate table and do a true cafeteria style where you give them a tray or you give them a plate and they go over and they choose what they want to use on their background, their paper or their tag board, and they can go back and they decorate. Of course, they can always go back to get more. I find that some of the best type of things to use for presenting these materials are those styrofoam trays that a lot of vegetables and fruits and meat and chicken come in. If not, you can just use regular paper plates. But this is one of my favorite, this cafeteria style art, and it can be done with a lot of different things. And sometimes, again, you have to be creative, and when an idea comes up or a holiday or something and it's something else you want to do that's not listed in the ebook, you might try to think, how can I do this where I'm going to give choices? Now, an interesting thing is, which at the end of the book, I do discuss how to think of your own ideas. And like at one point, I remember looking through, was trying to get some ideas from some online websites, and I found a bumblebee. And I said, a bumblebee, let's see, is there a way that I could make this into an educational arts and crafts? And I said, yes, I can do it even cafeteria style, because what you can do is you can create a lot of the pieces of the crafts that you would give the children and add more stuff and then just divide them up and let them put it together themselves. Like, say you have a bumblebee, you can put oval yellow pieces, and you can put different kinds of oval yellow pieces and black stripes and eyes and googly eyes, and you can add things, and then you lie them out and you will see the very mature children will actually use these things to create a bumblebee. But there will be children that are not developmentally ready for this, and they're going to create their own thing, but it will look somehow like a bumblebee because there will be yellow there and there will be black and there will be all kinds of stripes. And that's the way that you can really transfer some copycat arts and crafts activities over to the cafeteria style way. Now, the truth of the matter is, one thing you do have to know is that many, many of the activities cannot be transferred and are just not worth anything. If a teacher decides, the problem is teachers get very rigid, or adults get very rigid, and they decide they want to make a squirrel. Now, there's no developmentally appropriate way to make a squirrel, you might have to just drop it and not to make the squirrel. Because if you can't figure out a way that the children are going to do it and they're going to have choices, or they're going to be able to create and think and solve problems on their own, then you say, you know what? Maybe that is not a developmentally appropriate activity for these children. And you have to give that up. The second activity is process-only art activities. Process-only art activities are activities that are done purely for the process. Painting, clay, collage, not with a specific end goal in mind, like a project, like a pencil holder or a gift for a parent. And I mentioned the name Mary Ann F. Cole before. She is like the queen of the process-only art activity. She has loads of books with all kinds of wonderful activities that they can do. Now, the problem is, since this is a projects book, how does process-only art activities tie into projects? So some of our projects can be cards, Mother's Day cards, Father's Day cards, holiday cards, wrapping paper. And what we do is we create process-only art using many of the different activities. I do have a number of them listed in the ebook, but you can find many from Marion F. Cole on this Kinder Art and, you know, lots of places. You create this art on the paper, and then you turn them into the cards or the wrapping paper or whatever else it is that you decide to use. So that is a way of tying in those two types of activities. Now, a third thing is what I call process only with templates. Now, let's say it's a holiday and you want to send home a tree. So what you could do is you take a large paper and you cut it into a tree, and then you have the children create a process-only art activity on there. It's almost like a bait and switch, because The children really don't know what they're doing. They're just making the process only art, and you're making adults happy. So they made a tree or whatever other kind of symbol that you want to use. But this is kind of a way of like making everyone happy, having the children do the process only art activity, which is really what is great for them, but having the adults happy if you need to do that. So that is a third section, a third category. The fourth category is what I call transformed art. I know that there are some people that call it altered art, but I call it transformed art because you're transforming an object with a couple of different types of activities. And most of the activities that are done in transformed art, they're really crafts activities. Now, crafts as we know it in adults, it encompasses many, many different types of things. There's weaving and there's decoupage and there's metal working and leather craft and glass work and jewelry making. And it's really endless. And a lot of it is really, truly very creative. What happened, why crafts for kids became what it is not really like the crafts you see in the crafts fair, the beautiful crafts that adults that are into these crafts make. What happened is people decided they wanted to give children crafts. They didn't know how to do it developmentally appropriate. So they would create something, the adult, and just have the children copy it. Now what happens is if you allow children all this freedom in creativity, then if they develop a specific craft that they like, either the mosaics or the decoupage or the jewelry making, they will be able to be creative on their own because they've learned to be independent and they've learned to think and solve problems and they trust themselves and they feel good about themselves, so they can end up being wonderful crafters. So when I talk about crafts that really are detrimental to kids, I am not talking about adult crafts. So this transformed art, I use basically what I discussed. I discussed a bunch of them, but I concentrate mainly on three of them. It's papier mache, mosaics, and decoupage. So papier mache is really a wonderful activity, very messy. You can't mind getting too messy. You use glue and water and strips of newspaper. And papier mache is something that you can either create independent items, like you create sculptures out of papier mache, you could make bowls and masks with papier mache, but you also can cover objects with the paper and then you paint it afterwards. You could even change the shape by adding different layers of the newspapers, but this is one way of doing transforming objects into transformed art. Another one would be decoupage. And decoupage is the art of taking like any kinds of papers really and covering up an object very beautifully and then using a number of coats of glue, some watered down glue or something called Mod Podge, and it gets like a high gloss sheen and it's hard. And they can use lots of different papers. They can use a number of magazines, they can use tissue papers, they can use a combination, they can use one, they could make patterns, and it can be very beautiful. They can decoupage frames, they can decoupage pencil holders, a lot of different things that they can do, and it's a very beautiful, and it's more of a craftsy thing because they are coming out with something specific, but it is theirs because they are creating it. It's a transformed art activity. Mosaics is a little bit of a takeoff on decoupage. The only thing is you're using very tiny little pieces. This is not an activity for very young children because it's fine motor coordination, very fine motor. They cut them into small pieces and they can make beautiful arrangements. I've seen mosaics where children have made faces of mosaics with the eyes one color and the nose different color. Very beautiful. They can just experiment with different types of paper and decorate their objects that they're going to cover for the gift or whatever crafts project it is that they're making. The fifth category is really basically just decorations, because there are a number of holidays or events where you just want to make decorations. So I do have listed a number of different types of decorations. It's a little bit of more of like of a process only art activity because it's not a specific object, but it is just something decorative. It's tinkly paper, stringing, and squiggly glue pieces. And, you know, but the children love doing it, and they can bring home something really pretty for their decorative purposes. So those are the five categories that are listed. And they're in order of, actually in order of holidays. Now, I'm from the United States, so I had really started out this book, and I had only created this course with holidays that I knew about, and then some people had the book, and they requested that I include some of the holidays from down under and from the other part of the world, and I did some research, and I did. So if you live in Australia or in UK or in South Africa, I really made an attempt, and in Wales, I made an attempt to try to include activities for your holidays also. The truth is, at the end of the book, there is an index where I have listed the activities themselves. So if you want to create something, if you want to make something, and you are not going to follow a specific holiday, you can just go into the back and see what activity looks interesting. If you're having a birthday party, I think I even have a page there just talking about how you can do this with birthday parties. But you can cross-index and you can just pick up any other ideas. You don't have to only stick to that holiday. And I also have a couple of paragraphs talking about how to think up ideas on your own. And I think we talked about that, like I described with the bumblebee. And this is just such a wonderful, creative activity. I just get the biggest pleasure out of watching children create in this way. And you will see, if you're making the switch over from traditional arts and crafts to this kind of arts and crafts, you can't imagine the pleasure you get out of watching the children so engrossed and so interested and so involved in creating. There is a world of difference in the creation of activities, arts and crafts activities, in the educational arts and crafts way, and in the copycat arts and crafts way. Now, just to end this audio, what I would like to do is, there was a very famous songwriter and singer, Harry Chapin. I don't know if you've heard of him. He wrote Cats in the Cradle, and he wrote a wonderful song years ago called Flowers Are Red. It's a story about a little boy. It was actually inspired by someone he knew. The child came home with a report card that the teacher didn't like, and she said something about they're going to get him up to speed soon, and he wrote a song in response. It's about a child that is in a classroom situation, and he's trying to say flowers, so many colors in a rainbow, and the teacher is trying to teach him flowers are red, young man, and green leaves are green. So I'm going to play this for you that I got off of the internet, and listen carefully, if you can, to the words.
Corner. She said, it's me.
So I hope you enjoyed that song, or I hope you were able to hear it as much as I always do, no matter how many times I hear it. It's so poignant, I feel tears in my eyes every time I hear it. If you were not able to hear it, you just Google Flowers Are Red by Harry Chapin, and you can even find the lyrics online. Just you Google it, you'll see what comes up, and just listen to it and take the message to heart and have a wonderful time doing educational arts and crafts with your children or with your students. And I'd love to hear from you. I do have a blog, educationalartsandcrafts.com/blog, where I'm putting out lots of content and lots of interesting things about art for children. And hop on over there, leave me a comment, and I will make sure to answer you. Thanks for listening.